Welcome to War on Work, the show that gives you the information and inspiration you need to safely ditch your day job. I'm your host, Bo Blackwell, and I'm here to give you the battle plan you need to escape the corporate prison and start living a better life. Your job is killing you. It's time to start fighting back. Hey everybody, this is Bo Blackwell. Welcome to a new episode of War on Work. My guest today is a guy named Jordan Gray, who I met a little while back, and he's a really cool guy. We've known each other for a little while now and hit it off. Jordan is a relationship coach, as well as an author and an information product creator, and he made the transition to really having his own successful lifestyle business about a year and a half ago. And I'm going to talk to him more about kind of how he made that transition and what his business looks like now. But he's really built a great business for himself in areas that he's passionate about and where he's able to help a lot of people with. So thanks a lot for coming on the show, Jordan. It's great to have you.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Cool. So could you tell us a little bit about how you built your current business, what it looks like, and what your background was before that?
Sure. So my background before, from like 15 years old onwards, I always knew that I wanted to be someone that, had extra cash lying around. And so I got a job as soon as I legally could. Worked, for employers from 15 to 23. Odd jobs. I was in restaurants, front and back of house. I worked in the film industry for a while. I was a wedding photographer, just, bouncing around, trying to find my thing. And eventually kind of got to this place where I felt like I had more to offer to the world than just being, on salary somewhere or collecting paychecks. And I thought, I should start making profits, not paychecks. So I followed something that I'd always been passionate about since I was very young. And yeah, like you said, just over last year and a half, kind of slow burn, but really in the last 9 months, I've done a big push to build my online presence. And yeah, a lot of good things have happened. We'll get into that shortly.
Yeah, for sure. So you said it's always been a topic that you've been interested in, and we were kind of laughing before the show about not calling yourself a relationship expert because there's always more to learn. But yeah. How is that a field that you got into, or kind of how did you identify that and decide that that's where you could both help people and also make money?
I think compared to a lot of people, at least that I know in real life, as opposed to just the online world, I knew from a fairly young age what I had a proclivity towards. And I knew, I have stories from, when I was 7 years old in elementary school on the playground, when all of my male friends were out trying to get the attention of the girls by playing basketball or football or soccer and being amazing at sports, I would always be the only male sitting on the sidelines talking with the girls, because I found conversation and relationships way more interesting than kind of jockeying for status by playing sports. I was just always the guy that, even before I'd been in relationships, everyone in my life would come to me for relationship advice. And so, through my teens and early 20s, I just started to absorb everything that I could about attraction, relationship management, psychology, sociology, how our brains work, how we interact with each other, and what makes a successful marriage. Just hundreds of books on the topic. And so I knew it definitely wasn't an overnight thing. It was just kind of, since I've had memories, it's always been a thing that I've been passionate about. And, I couldn't tell my brain to not think about it if I tried.
Right. Gotcha. And so how did you kind of come to the idea that you could formalize that or as a business, or what did you right. How did you start that process of, building an online presence or building a coaching business around that kind of idea?
So I had been an offline, as in in-person relationship coach full-time for about 4 years before I started the practice of building my own brand. And so I'd seen it replicated over and over, that I joined up with this company that I added a ton of value to, and I was writing their courses, And again, these were all in-person live courses. And I started to see that, again, I was still employed. I had a boss at that job. And I could see myself adding so much value so quickly to their business model. But I'd never really been an entrepreneur. Like, I'd kind of dipped my toe in when I was doing the wedding photography and things like that. But it was always just trying the water. And so I think I hit a certain point where, after seeing how much revenue I could build for this other company, some could argue I was a bit of an entrepreneur by creating products for them. I thought, you know what? I can only listen to the fear voice in my mind for so long until I have to try something for myself and, see if my friends and family are right when they tell me that I could go and do this on my own, even though, I'm crapping myself. It's so terrifying to actually take that leap and just go, okay, well, I'm gonna, leave everything that's safe and comfortable, really have a try at this. And, I think for me, the biggest fear was having to, publicly admit that I was, okay, I'm gonna try and do this thing. I'm gonna make a big push. And then 6 months later, I'd be broke. And my friends and family that were the naysayers would all be able to say, I told you so. And it was that, I think for me, it was a lot of that potential shame and embarrassment that motivated me to really make it work so no one could say, I told you so.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, do you think any of that kind of fear of saying, this is what I'm going to do, and putting yourself out there was tied at all to the coaching or the sort of, quote unquote expert style space where you're telling other people I can help you? It seems like that, that has its own kind of fears that go along with it of putting yourself out there as, someone that other people should listen to on a particular topic. Was that an issue for you at all, or did you feel pretty confident that, what you had to share was valuable and it was just a matter of being able to, to market it and get it out there into the world effectively?
I would definitely, great question. I would definitely say a mix of both. Brené Brown, who's like a vulnerability and shame researcher who's done a bunch of really cool TED Talks over the last couple of years, has said that that is basically the first hurdle that keeps anyone from really becoming themselves or really, being their authentic self, is that feeling of, who am I to do blank? Like, how am I good enough to do this thing that I tell myself I want to do? And our biggest fear is putting ourselves out there and then having the world give us that feedback of, no, like your shame and your fear was right. You aren't good enough. You should just go back, into your corner cubicle and do your thing without making a big splash in the world. And I think that there's, at least in my daily life, the kind of blog posts and articles that I happen to come across, there's this really big thread of, just live your passions and be you and, like whatever, it might be Aristotle, some old philosopher that said, maybe it was Ralph Waldo Emerson, who once said, what you can be, you must be. Or like what a man can become, he must become. And I feel like the kind of saturation of that message that's, pinned and tweeted and passed around, it makes it seem easy, like there isn't any fear in there, when for me personally, I couldn't imagine a more terrifying thing than becoming what you truly, are capable of becoming. Because that's like the ultimate vulnerability, is saying, okay, well, I'm going to leave this desk job, I'm going to leave comfort and safety and chase growth and fulfillment and actualization. But that's terrifying.
Yeah, no, that's such a great point, and you're right, it doesn't get talked about at all because, yeah, a lot of people seem to think, and it gets put out there a lot, that like, yeah, once you're kind of doing your thing, it's going to be smooth sailing and life's going to be great. And there are so many, I mean, even, and I'm sure you've experienced this too, like even once you are doing your thing and doing well at it and getting good feedback from people, that fear, I don't think ever really goes away. One of my kind of mentors, a lady named Valerie Young, talks about the imposter syndrome, of even once you're super successful in something, that you still have that doubt of like, oh God, I've just gotten lucky, and someday people are going to find me out that I don't really know what I'm talking about. So,
Exactly. And
yeah.
that's, unanimous across like so many high-level CEOs. They're sitting in their office of their, multi-billion dollar corporation, and they're just waiting for, for that guillotine to drop. They're like, oh, they're gonna find me out. And for me, I actually had an instance of that come up recently, just a couple weeks ago, where someone sent me just like the worst hate mail I've ever received on one of my blog posts. Because, you can't please everyone, and you can't be everything to every market simultaneously. And even though it was, drastically disproportionate to the amount of positive feedback that I get every week, this one comment just completely killed my creative vibe for like 2 days, because he was like, this is awful, you're a terrible writer, blah, blah, blah. And even though I had to, like, that was one comment that I had to sort through out of like 30 of people saying, wow, this completely, this is a paradigm shift for me, this changed my life, this has already improved my relationship. That one person I just dwelled on for hours, and I was like, they found me out. Like, it's exactly that imposter syndrome that even though, I have a near perfect success rate over the last 5 years of being a full-time relationship coach, there's still that nagging voice that I don't think ever completely goes away. And this is a random person to quote, but I was actually watching an interview of Madonna recently, and of her within the last year or so. And the interviewer asked her, are you ever completely happy with something that you put out, like with an album, or with a concert that you perform? Are you ever 100% satisfied? And she said, no, absolutely not. And that made me, or at least the perfectionist in me, really relieved that I was like, okay, if someone who's had that epic of a career also has that inner critic, then we're all human and we're all in this together and everyone feels the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think that's something that separates people who are able to make it as an entrepreneur from those who maybe can't or never actually take that leap and go for it, is just kind of recognizing that that you are never going to be satisfied with it, and maybe never feel totally confident in it, but you have to just keep doing it anyway and face that fear over and over again. Because I've known a lot of people that try to start a business, or they, think that something's going to work, and then they hit that first tiny bit of failure. Not even, any kind of catastrophic failure at all, but just things didn't go as well as they'd hoped, and they immediately say, "Well, this wasn't meant to be," or, "Well, I obviously, I'm not cut out for this," and just give up. So I think that's an important part of entrepreneurship that people don't talk about, is being able to face that fear regularly and, keep going even when you feel like you're failing over and over again.
Feel the fear and do it anyways. I feel like running your own business and doing any kind of like internal self-development are kind of synonymous. Like you can't have one without the other. Your business will only grow in whatever market you're in. Your business only grows to the extent that you are, looking into what your blocks or your weaknesses are. Like if you don't admit to yourself, okay, I'm a bad whatever, content creator or WordPress guy or whatever the format is, until you become aware of, okay, I'm definitely just, this is a weak spot. You have to, kind of make friends with all the demons inside of you and like wave hello and not, stop ignoring them.
Yeah, definitely stop suppressing them and pretending they're not there, but also not getting completely eaten up by them and obsessing over them, because yeah, you're never going to be great at everything for sure.
No, focus on your strengths.
Cool. So, once you decided to kind of make that move from entrepreneur to entrepreneur, how did you what did that process look like for you? How long did it take? Was it something where just one day you said, "All right, that's it, I quit and I'm going out on my own," or did you kind of do it over time? And I know you were already doing content creation and stuff like that, so obviously you knew that you'd be able to do that out on your own, but how long was it before you really started putting out your own books or products and that kind of thing?
So, yeah, like you said, it's definitely been a process, and I think my kind of exit from the employed world, I'm assuming it's unique probably to a lot of your other interviews, in that the morning that I woke up and decided that I needed to change something because I wasn't excited or fulfilled, or I wasn't thriving by any means by the end of being in that 4-year relationship coaching job with the other company, I woke up one morning and basically just made a decision. And within 24 hours, I did the full quarter life crisis overhaul, where I called my employers and I quit. I called my girlfriend and I broke up with her. I donated or Craigslisted over 95% of all the physical things that I owned in the world, and just really cleared out everything. And what I did was I booked a one-way ticket to Southeast Asia, because I also hadn't done much long-term travel. And I told myself that I wouldn't come back to Canada, where I live. I wouldn't come back to Canada until I was making over $500 a month passively online. And I had told myself it was non-negotiable. You can't come back. Otherwise, you will know, there was courage in trying, but you will know that you failed by not hitting this benchmark. So for me, it was a pretty cut and dry, I need to make this work kind of decision.
Yeah, no, I hear that story all the time. No, I'm just kidding. I have never heard anyone that said they quit their job, broke up with their girlfriend, gave away all their stuff, and bought a one-way ticket right away. I mean, what kind of happened that got you to that point? Because that's pretty extreme. I mean, to go from I'm not feeling totally satisfied by this job to changing everything and really setting a big goal for yourself like that and a massive life shift. I mean, was it just sort of a building, growing kind of dissatisfaction with how things were going, or was it that you had a real epiphany or breakdown like Brené Brown might talk about it? I mean, what was it that kind of prompted you to make such a huge radical change?
Probably a mix of both. There might have been about a 10% breakdown in there, but yeah, I think it was several months of this kind of low-level anxiety, which was just a whisper inside of me that kept telling me, you're better than this. You can do more than, just creating courses within this organization. You can do it by yourself. And yeah, just waking up one morning and just deciding that I was going to, be better and become more myself and step into growth and out of comfort and safety.
So why specifically did you feel like it was important to leave Canada and, go out into the world and not be able to go back? It's such an interesting thing. It's almost like a mythological hero's journey kind of thing you can't go home until you've accomplished a quest,
Exactly. A lot of the logic behind it was exactly that. Hmm. When I left the company, I was 25, so still relatively young, 24, 25, around there. And I didn't feel like I had really, I always felt somewhat supported, not financially, but emotionally supported by my parents. And I have a really good, safe foundation with roots in where I live and where I grew up in Canada. And I just felt like I needed to throw off a lot of the support systems. And, like the heat and pressure that creates a diamond, I needed to intentionally forge myself into something stronger. And I didn't think that I could do that by staying in the safe nest of what I, grown to have around me with my social circle and network in Canada. So I just thought, if I'm going to really have a good run of this, I have to commit 100%. I didn't want to dip my toe in. One of my earliest business mentors told me that 99% of the way is hard as hell, but doing something 100% is easy. So really committing, I knew I had to throw off all of the shackles and just go for it.
Yeah, wow. That's really fascinating. So, obviously you deliberately built a location-independent kind of business. I mean, a lot of the stuff you're doing is either sort of passive online income, like the books you've written and the information products and things like that. Coaching, I assume you probably mostly do online as well. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. I do Skype coaching and phone and email support. So it's one-to-one.
Gotcha. Is that something that, was specifically important to you? And, is that something that you kind of still is a big part of your life? Is traveling around and not having that kind of secure home base, or has it, is it just a nice side effect of the businesses you built?
A bit of both. I think when I first started building it as a location independent, online kind of platform, I think it was more for the travel within the first, 6 to 12 months. That was my intention. But long term, I feel like it's less about having it not tied to a location and more about the time freedom that I want to have. Like I was journaling recently, as I do, basically every morning for at least 5 minutes, and just checking in with myself and questioning my intentions and goals, et cetera. And I realized that one of my biggest, intentions or reasons for wanting to have passive income to be paid even when I'm not, at my computer or working, was that whenever my girlfriend or my future wife is sick, I don't want to ever have to phone in to my boss and say, "Hey, can I have the day off because my wife is sick and I want to hang out with her?" I just want to be able to do that. Like, to me, that is what feels like real freedom, is you setting your own schedule and your own time and waking up without an alarm clock and all of the, forming semi-cliches that the online marketers are using these days. But really, that was it for me. It was, being able to control my own schedule and just feel like my hands are on the steering wheel of my life and not someone else's on my wheel.
Gotcha. That's cool. So on that kind of topic of how you spend your time, I mean, what does kind of a day look like for you in your business? How much time do you spend working versus playing, or is it all kind of wrapped together? What does the life of a relationship coach and author look like?
It comes in phases. I'm a huge fan of Jim Rohn's model of, our work comes in seasons. So there are summers and there's springs and winters, et cetera. And so right now, what my usual days look like, around 5 or 6 a.m., I wake up and I do my writing. I'm an introvert by nature. I really like to kind of slow down and have time with my thoughts to really get them out on paper effectively. And so I do my best writing and most of my creative work before I feel like the world has woken up around me, when it's just dead quiet and it's me and my keyboard. I really thrive creatively in the mornings. And now, saying that, this is the first time I've said this in an interview, I realize that it's kind of funny that I'm self-employed to set my own hours, but I still wake up before most people do.
I was going to say, I like that you said don't wake up with an alarm clock, but wake up way before you would have with an alarm clock.
Well, this is the thing. I enjoy, some of the listeners might have heard of circadian rhythms. I do really well waking up with or right before the actual sunrise. So, our sleep patterns as a society, and especially in North America, are quite messy in terms of how much artificial light, like the computers we're looking at or the iPhones we're staring into from a foot away as we're going to sleep, and it messes with your dopamine centers and how easy it is and or no to get to sleep, but also the quality of your sleep. So I try and shut off all artificial light before like 8 or 9 o'clock, get to bed and to sleep by 10. And so for me, waking up at 5 or 6 naturally comes quite easily, but it definitely took a few weeks to get used to.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, it's so interesting how many people I know, that are successful or that are, kind of living the lifestyle they want to live, do wake up super early, even if they don't have to, and do a lot of work and a lot of creative type stuff before the rest of the world wakes up. And I don't know that many people in the job world that do
No.
that same kind of thing. It's like they stay up late instead, and then are hitting the snooze button 20 times,
Yeah, and I think it's, you feel kind of, or at least I did, I felt more being employed by someone else that I didn't feel passionately about the times that I was employed for the most part. Whereas now I wake up and, I like drop kick myself out of bed because I'm so stoked to get to my computer. I'm one of those really annoying people in the morning. I was never a morning person until this last year of being self-employed and actually caring about my job. And now I'm so stoked to get downstairs and get writing, that yeah, it's a world of difference. Whereas in the employed world, like we were saying, like I would stay up late because I wasn't looking forward to work, so I wanted to stay awake and have a beer with my friends and socialize, and then wake up and begrudgingly put on the uniform or the the button up or the suit and go, okay, time to go into that job and make someone else all the profits. It just, why would I want to wake up at 5 in the morning to make someone else rich? Doesn't make sense.
Yeah, absolutely. So, when you're doing your creative work in the morning, you mentioned you're doing journaling and things like that. Is that also when you tend to do, writing for books and blog posts and that kind of thing, or is that type of creative work spread out throughout the day?
Exactly. So those are the things that I do primarily in the mornings. So between, let's say, 5 to 7:30 roughly, I write blog posts, I write a section of my new book or an outline for another book that I'm going to be writing. And then between around 7:30 to 8:30, I do what I then consider to be my morning routine. Like for me, the early morning creative stuff is just like, it's playtime. Like I love writing, and that just comes easily to me. The morning routine stuff is like, okay, now I'm going to get out my journal and do kind of self-reflection, self-analyzing, goal setting. I bust out the blender and make myself a morning smoothie, and it's now close to 8 o'clock, so I don't feel as guilty being really loud with my blender when my girlfriend's sleeping upstairs. And yeah, then I'll go to the gym, come back, shower, have lunch, and then I usually do my Skype coaching calls or interviews or podcast, blog, catch up between around 12:30 to 3 at the most. Like for me, that's a very full day of work, and even then I might do that structure of a day maybe 4 days a week, 5 days a week.
Gotcha.
So I'm finished by 2 or 3 p.m. every day.
Cool. That's interesting. So, for people who aren't familiar with it, what exactly is a relationship coach? Like, are you working with individuals, or are you doing kind of couples coaching, or how does that typically, what does that look like in terms of what you're actually kind of doing with people?
It's a question I get a lot, and honestly, I'd be more surprised if people did know what a relationship coach was, because it's,
Right.
the job's only really, from my experience, only existed for maybe a decade or two in the way that it does now. So yeah, there's definitely some flexibility. I do work with some couples and some women, but currently the people that I work with one-on-one, it's about 80% men. They're largely like 21 to 40-year-old guys that are either in or out of relationships. And I'm, in a lot of ways, I'm kind of like a men's emotional therapist, but men they don't really like saying that they're A, seeing a therapist, or B, talking to someone about their emotions. So it is primarily, okay, how do you align with your path and purpose? How do you self-analyze and figure out what your needs and desires are? And then once you have your life somewhat figured out, how do you find a relationship or partner that fits into that, and you complement each other well, and then how to make that thrive.
Gotcha. Interesting. That's cool. So is it kind of open-ended, or do you tend to work with people for a set amount of time, or is it just sort of client by client, however long they need it?
It's client by client. My male clients tend to not want to do too many sessions in terms of, most of the calls are, I've got this problem and it's frustrating, and I've been trying to figure it out for a couple of days, and I just really don't get it. So, let's hop on an hour call at most. And, guys always want to bring their problems or conversations to a conclusion, to a sense of brevity. So they're not looking to chat and be emotionally validated. It's more just, okay, I can't get over my ex-girlfriend. Give me some action steps. How do I do it? Thank you. Goodbye. So
Gotcha.
that's most of the coaching calls. But yeah, there definitely are some guys that I've been working with for, over 3 years that we do a lot of work up front when they want to process some old emotional residue or, figure out their patterns in relationships. And then we'll touch base whenever they reach out to me, every few weeks or every few months, just to kind of top up their mindset.
Gotcha. Could you talk a little bit more about kind of the author side of your business, I guess? Like, how did you decide to start writing books? Do you use that as sort of a a way to get people to know you so that they end up hiring you for coaching, or is that sort of its own whole thing where you're just delivering people kind of prepackaged information to help them out?
I use my books largely as kind of a really extended FAQ, frequently asked questions, because for me, I always needed to feel some sense of development or growth or advancing myself. And so I tend to get bored if I have to answer the same question more than if I answer the same question in more than 20 sessions or like 10 sessions, and I go, okay, this is clearly a pain point enough that many guys either don't have a resource that they trust in to learn this stuff, or it's, it just, there's a market for it. And so because I can, because I want to stop answering that question, I'll write a, 40 to 100 page book on whatever the pain point is and go, okay, here, you have a question on where to take your girlfriend or wife on a date. Here's a book that explains everything, digest it at your own leisure. There it is. And then that's a lot cheaper for them to buy, a $3 ebook than to pay my hourly rate and talk to me one-on-one to regurgitate content that I'm bored with. So that's part of it. Starting out, I didn't know whether I wanted it or whether it would work more as lead generation or passive revenue. And so in the beginning, I was just throwing things at the wall. I didn't know what would stick. And so I wrote these three books within the first 2 months of travel. That was part of the $500 a month sprint that I was doing. So there's another example of how easily content comes to me. I wrote, published, and marketed three books within 2 months, and two of them became bestsellers. So that's my wheelhouse. That comes easy to me. And so I've definitely had a few clients come from it. And I think the biggest benefits to publishing on Amazon for me have been the kind of social proof elements of, oh, he's a two-time bestseller. These are on Amazon. It adds to your Google presence. It looks like a real brand. I remember one Amazon author saying that, having a book is like the new business card. People don't hand out business cards anymore. It's like, oh, here's my book, whether it's physical or digital copy. That's the new kind of social proof that a lot of online guys are using.
Yeah,
And
absolutely.
so, yeah, that's the three books have been all of my passive revenue for the last 8 or 9 months or so since I first launched them. And I've got a goal to write three more by the end of this year, which I'm currently spending my 5 to 7 in the mornings on.
Yeah, 3 books by the end of the year is definitely a good challenge. That's cool. As we're kind of wrapping up, I was curious, how much your business has evolved from, when you kind of initially kicked it off and what you initially saw it looking like. And do you have sort of big goals and plans for where you want it to go in the future, or are you just kind of letting it play out naturally and seeing what comes along?
I started out with a lot of really big pie-in-the-sky goals, which I still have, and I still alter, calibrate every few weeks or so. But I'm a huge believer in the kind of lean startup aspect of entrepreneurship, which is don't just come to market with a completely finished product that you think is going to change the world. Put out a little iteration of what you have, the minimum viable product, and ask your market, what do you think about this? How can I make this more valuable? Do you see value in this? Do you enjoy it? Has it improved your life? How can I improve upon it? And then really listening to your market. And for me, it's been the biggest lesson of this last year of, really pushing and growing my brand, is that you can throw out things into the blogosphere, to the market, or whatever market you're in. But it really comes down to, I think the market tells you where you're going to some extent. Like, you can shape it and you can say, no, I won't do a video course, I want to do a book, or vice versa. But I have certain goals that probably will come, or that will come true over the next few years. But the path towards getting there, I think the market's gonna help navigate me there better than I could, because they tell me what they like, and then I just give them more of those things.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because when you were talking about your book writing process, I immediately thought of the whole lean startup thing of saying, if this question keeps coming up over and over again, I know there's a market for it, and I'm just going to create a book on that topic. So, yeah, I mean, obviously you're already kind of putting that principle into to work for your business. So, yeah, that makes a
Exactly.
lot of
And
sense.
there was even a hidden step in there that first it'll come up, in conversations with friends and family or clients, and then, then in conversations with clients one-on-one on Skype. And then I'll write a blog post about it. And then if that does well, then I write a book about it. And then now, just after, this last year of building the brand, I'm starting to get to the point where, okay, now I see which books are doing well. Then I can make, either a live or e-course based on, which of the five books is blowing up way more than the other ones. So I'm really, at every step of the way, I'm just giving more and more value to whatever the market is telling me they want more value about.
Yeah, awesome. That's great. So as kind of one of the final questions I like to ask people is, what in your opinion, what are the worst, and I always start with the worst, but the worst and the best parts of being an entrepreneur?
Oh, man. The best and the worst. I would say the answer to both, in my opinion, is the scheduling, the time freedom of it, because it's amazing. It's so backwards to even say that it's a hassle in any way, but we're so fortunate to be able to call our schedules in a lot of ways, and like I alluded to earlier, taking time or days off the drop of a hat, going for a weekend getaway because you can, hang out with your girlfriend or wife or partner when they're sick just because you don't have to call in and talk to the boss about it first. But at the same time, there's that quote about how, in equal measure, you could say that I never worked a day in my life or I worked every minute of my life. And I feel like there's always that kind of sliver of ice in my brain that no matter what experience I'm having in real life, there's always a little piece of my brain that's slightly not present with it because it's thinking from that kind of external observing ego perspective of maybe I could write a blog post about this. Like if me and my girlfriend have a fight, I'm like, okay, how can I take the resolution of that fight and let my audience or my list benefit from it in some way?
Yeah, that's an interesting take, and I can totally see how that would be an issue of, not feeling completely present because you're always
You're
wanting
always
to
on a little
analyze
bit.
things. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I totally agree with you about the time thing as well. I mean, not only that, you're kind of always on as an entrepreneur, which is true, but I found for myself too that the freedom is awesome and is, great, and you don't ever have to ask anybody's permission, but you also don't have anyone holding you accountable, so it's really easy to waste
Exactly.
your time and or just get distracted by things. I was talking to a friend of mine today who's interested in becoming an entrepreneur, and they were asking me what challenges they think they're gonna have or that I thought they would have, and I said, one of the hardest things is just, especially when you're working from home, not getting caught up in using all your time doing stuff around the house or, doing tasks. Like
Exactly.
my weekly to-do list task for this week was half things that have nothing to do with business. So it's hard not to
Right.
end up using all your time on personal stuff.
On lower leverage tasks that aren't actually growing your business in a lot of ways, yeah.
Yeah,
That's
absolutely.
funny. I was having a similar conversation with a friend recently, and I kind of, internally I came to the conclusion that every self-employed or entrepreneurial person that I know that's built their own brand, while being in the space over the last few years, they all have something in common, which is they, much like myself, are generally drawn to more solo sports. Like for me, for example, I love like rock climbing and surfing and boxing and working out in a gym, things that, are the antithesis or the opposite of team sports. Because when I break through a new barrier or like I achieve something new, the glory is all mine. And also, when I fail, it's only on me, and I can't put that on anyone else. There's something very attractive to that about me. And, conversely, every person that I know that has tried to build their own business and kind of like you mentioned earlier, at the first tiny sign of, resistance or hardship or difficulty, they threw in the towel and like, oh, never mind. Those people, again, my anecdotally and totally biased perspective, are people that love, basketball and soccer and team sports where there is much less of an importance on individual excellence and much more on teamship.
That's such a funny observation. It's so interesting. 'Cause I had never thought about that, but I've always been way more into individual sports, or even when I play team sports, like I play indoor soccer, but I play goalie, and it's kind of an
Totally.
isolated, position where it's sort of
That's
all
the
on you.
intruder that's like, yeah, if you let the goal in, that's on you. That's funny.
Oh, that's really interesting. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that, but you're right. I haven't played team sports since I was a little kid because I found it too frustrating, and I've always preferred the individual sports. So
Exactly.
nice. Well, so where can people find out more about what you do? Where can they follow you and check out your coaching and your products and things like that?
My website, the main hub for everything to do with my brand, is jordangrayconsulting.com. That's JordanGray consulting.com. And if you Google Jordan Gray, my Amazon books will come up, and other blog posts and interviews and things will also show up in that result.
Cool. And I'll make sure to link all that up in the show notes as well. If anybody wants to check those out and is having any trouble finding it, you can just check out the show notes on my website. Well, Jordan, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to be here. This has been really cool and interesting to learn more about your business and how you got into it. So thanks so much for taking the time.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, thanks everybody for listening. If you want to leave a review of the show, which I'd really appreciate, you can go to waronwork.com/iTunes. And I also wanted to let you know that I just released some free training videos that I created to show you some ways that you can start making money on the side while you're still employed, so that you can start building up a base of income so that you don't have to take the leap from your salary to nothing at all. So if you're interested in checking those out, they're totally free. Just go to waronwork.com/subscribe to sign up, and you'll get emailed access to those. So thanks again for listening. I'll be back with you again soon.